Today after lunch, Grandpa looked at me and he said, "Let's go out here. I want to show you something real quick." So we went out to his old shed. He's got two or three of them around, but we went out to the one that he built back way back when they first built the house. And he had something in there he wanted to show me, but I hadn't been in there. I remember being a little kid and finally getting to run the lawnmower, the riding lawnmower, that old Murray you had. And I remember being scared to death to pull up that ramp and get it in the building because I was afraid I was going to, you know, crash it or something or hang the deck on it. I remember you telling me, "Now, get over so you don't hit the door." And that's like some of my earliest memories in that shed, you know. And so anyway, we're in there and I'm looking around and there's a few things in there I ain't seen in a long, long time. And I turned around and I seen this little box over sitting on the shelf, and I, in an instant, I knew what it was. And it was a little cedar box about this long and about that big square. And when we lived in Mexico, Dad had his woodworking tools down there, and he was doing a little bit of carpenter work just because, you know, he had the time to do it, and it was just a way. He was working with a shop down the road there and making some stuff for them, and as a way to reach out to some people and make some connections and make a little bit of money, too. And so he made this little old box for me, and it's just a little toolbox. And, I mean, it ain't real super big, but I kept stuff. It was just a box. And I hadn't seen it. It was one of them things, you know, how you've had things from your childhood that you really loved when you had them, and you remember them, and but for whatever reason, the sands of time have just swallowed them up, and you don't know where they've ever went to, you know? And that was one of those things for me. And I thought about it a lot, but I just kind of, you know, it's gone. I guess it got lost in one of the moves, I suppose. And I give it away or something. Well, there sat that little box. It had dirt daubers on it. But in a moment, I knew what it was. And I went over there, and the latch is still just as tight as it ever was. And you open it up, and it still looked, I mean, it's just exactly like it was. And Dad used to have, you remember how people used to have them label makers that you had the dial on it? And you could turn it and squeeze it with your hand, and it had the tape that come out. Oh, I thought them things were so cool. And Dad had one, and he made my name in that, and he stuck it on the end of it for me. And there was my name still on the end of it. Now, I remember Dad building that thing for me. I got a little gun cabinet at home, like a little gun rack that goes on the wall. And it's little. But on the back of it, it says, "Made in Mexico, I think, 1989. For Seth Miller by his dad." I've still got it. I remember when he built it for me. And, you know, I grew up watching Dad build a lot of stuff. And Grandpa Brinkley used to build a lot of stuff too. And, you know, it was just kind of in me from the time I was little to build stuff. I still build stuff. I build all kinds of stuff. I built houses for years. And I've built motors and lots of different things through the years. I've built things. And it's neat to see things that have been built long ago. That's one of my favorite things to do, is to go somewhere and see old construct, like old houses in like some colonial town. I tell you what, if you ever go to Farmington and you turn there like you're going to go downtown to the old courthouse down through there, that main street before you get to the courthouse there is lined down both sides with grand old homes. And they've been taken care of. And the lawns are real pretty and the landscaping's real nice and there's flowers in the flower beds and it's been... And them homes are over 100 years old. And you sit and look at them and you think, because, I mean, I used to build houses and did a lot of trim work and things like that. And I had power tools and air guns and all that kind of stuff to do it with. And I look at that stuff and I think it's just a testament to the craftsmanship that went into building that house. Because some man somewhere that's been gone for a long time made very little money to do all that by hand. Take a wooden hand plane, get it adjusted just right, and plane off all that lumber smooth by hand to the right thickness so it matched everything else. And then he took and put it in a miter box and sawed it with a saw by hand. And then he took a piece of sandpaper and he cleaned it up so that it'd fit together. They didn't have caulk back then to caulk your joints. You know, that was, man, a lot of trim guys, that's what they do. They just get her close and jam it in the corner and whack it with a hammer and nail it to the wall and take a tube of caulk and right up through there and hide that crack, you know. Not these guys. These men were builders. They built something and it lasted. They built something, and long after they were gone, it was a testimony to the craftsmanship, to the loyalty to their trade. It was more than just a house to them. It was their name. It was what they were leaving behind. You know, in a way, I guess you could say it was kind of like their legacy. You know, I worked for her dad for a long time over there, and that's what he is. He's a builder. Been a builder for 45 years. And far as I know, he's still trying to build something. Now, he don't get around as quick as he used to, but he's still building stuff. You know, and people who have a mind to build things, that's the first place they go when a problem arises. They want to try and build something to fix it, or build something to get around it, or over it, or under it. Or they don't look around to see who can help them out of the problem. They usually try to see what they can do to fix it. You know, I've watched him take a very super, I could write a book about Right Way Construction. That was the name of his business. Right Way Construction. Done the right way. And you order stuff from suppliers. Like we had this house one time and we called them houses that were real cut up, you know, had a, you know, a real cut up roof, real high roof with a bunch of different hips and joints and different levels and valleys, and inside they got all different heights of ceilings and stuff. So when you ordered the trusses for this house, just like two tractor trailer loads of trusses, and they are a mess. It's just like putting together a big giant puzzle. And we got them and they dumped them off on the ground and left, and it was my job to go out there and cut the bands on them and start separating them out and getting them in piles with like kind, you know, so we'd know how to set it all up. We got to looking, and they had made them trusses wrong. And I'm talking about $35,000 worth of trusses made wrong. And it was interior stuff, like things that would be inside the roof here. They were built wrong. So instead of postponing the whole job for another month, her dad went out there with a sawzall and me, or should I say, I went out there with a sawzall with her dad, and he had the paper, he had the instructions, and he had the blueprints, and he had a tape measure and a pencil. And he, after everybody else went home, me and him stood out there every evening for 3 or 4 days, and we figured out what needed to be cut off of them things and how to scab them all back together right and make them work. And the job stayed on schedule. He's a builder. He seen the problem, bad as it was, but he figured out a way to fix it. And I just want to talk a little bit here tonight about building. You know, that's what we're all doing. We're either being built upon, and we're also building on other people all the time. If you'll turn your Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, it's where we're going to be. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, we're going to start in verse number 5. There's a lot of different things I've done for a living in my life, but during the majority of my 20s and part of my 30s, I was a builder. So a lot of the memories that I have about my working career, if you want to call it that, in my younger days, my youth, as it were, is building. And, you know, there's so many things that can be it can be such a parallel to our Christian life and how we're supposed to be with each other. There's so many things. And I started reading this, and it just kind of jumped out at me a little bit. And so I want to talk about it. Let's read in verse number 5 of 1 Corinthians chapter 3. It says, "Who then is Paul? And who is Apollos? But ministers by whom ye believed, even as the Lord gave to every man. I have planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then, neither is he that planteth anything." That don't mean he that planteth anything. He's saying, so the guy that planted this, he ain't anything. He's nothing. So is he that planteth anything. So then, neither is he that planteth anything, neither he that watereth, but God that giveth the increase. Now he that planteth and he that watereth are one, and every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor. For we are laborers together with God. Ye are God's husbandry. Ye are God's building. According to the grace of God which is given unto me, as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. But, he says, let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. Don't just go about this all willy-nilly. You can't do that when you're building, or you'll have a big old pile of mess. For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, if any man build upon this foundation gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, every man's work shall be made manifest. For the day shall declare it. The day, not the night, the day shall declare it. Because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. If any man's work abide, which he hath built thereupon, he shall receive a reward. If any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss. But he himself shall be saved, yet so as by fire. All right, well, let's pray, and I'll get started. Lord, thank you for your blessings again. Thank you for the opportunity to stand here and do this. Thank you for giving this to me, Lord. It's just a neat little picture. A lot of emotion tied to all this. I relate to it so much. Pray that you'd help me to get it across, for it to be a blessing and a help, as it was to me. In Jesus' name, amen. In my experience in the building trades, you ran across all kinds of different people. And it's that way in a lot of things that I've done, but in this particular career, if you want to call it that, in this particular trade, you run across so many different kinds of people. And everybody's got a reputation for one thing and another. Some of it's good, some of them's not so good. Oh, look, it's our first wasp of the season. Yay. There's the devil. He finally made it back. But, you know, we had all kinds of subcontractors. My father-in-law was a general contractor, and then we had all kinds of subcontractors he would use for the drywall and for the painting and for the, you know, plumbing, and we did the electric and stuff, but, boy, that thing's going to have to be dealt with, ain't it? I'm going to have to... Hold on. There he is. Kill the devil. Woo! We got him. All right. Now maybe we all can focus again. All right. But anyway, you know, you run across all these different kinds of guys. And you might have, you know, there was a certain small short list of men that we would use to do our subcontracting. You want to know why that list was so short? Because the list with the bad ones was so long. And there's a fine line between somebody who's really good and their availability. and somebody who wasn't quite as good and their availability. I mean, you had to kind of split the difference on the quality of work you were wanting based upon the timeline that you had to get it done on. You know, if you had 2 or 3 months to wait, you could get the good guy to do it. He cost a little bit more. You had to wait a little longer, but he was worth it because he was good. And you knew you didn't even have to go to the job. He could just show up and do his work and leave, and you knew it was done right. You wouldn't have to call him back. But if you had to get it done and you were pressed for time, there wasn't no way you was going to get him. So there was another list of kind of mediocre fellas, and, you know, he'd use them every once in a while for certain things. And there was always little hiccups and little problem. He had to kind of hold their hand a little bit more. And so I want to talk about, first of all, good builders and some of their character traits. All of us are builders. And in the spiritual realm of things and in our life, you need to understand that. I mean, it ain't just spiritually. Back when I was a kid and I was, you know, pulling at the reins a little bit, and I was upset because I wanted to go over here and everybody else was going over there, and Dad made me go over there with them. And I didn't like it, and I griped about it and throwed a fit, and I said, why can't I just do what I want to do? And he said, well, you need to understand that no man is an island. And I'm like, what's that even supposed to mean? He said, well, no man is an island out there by himself where he's all standalone by himself, and he don't affect nobody, and nobody affects him. You don't live your life like that. It doesn't happen. If I pulled up and moved to the middle of the deepest, farthest bush in Alaska and stayed there and never came back, and nobody could ever get to me, and I could never get to nobody, I would still affect a whole bunch of people's life because I'd be gone. I mean, there's nothing that you do in this life that doesn't affect somebody else in some way, directly or indirectly. And time factors into this thing too, because if I do something and it don't indirectly affect Gary, there's a good chance that a few years from now, it might directly affect him then. You know what I'm saying? We do that with everything we do, everybody we're around. It starts, and it's kind of like this little micro ecosystem concerning this matter in your home. You know, you got kids, you know how it is. And this one's got their stuff they don't want nobody to touch. And this one over here has got this thing that they take offense to every time anybody says anything about any little thing. And you got to be careful about that. And you learn how to deal with each other and coexist with each other in a way. Why? How? How does that work? Well, because you're constantly bumping up against each other in the path of life in your little home. And, you know, you can't just be crossways with each other all the time. If everybody's getting along, you got one person that's the square peg in the round hole, what are you going to do? Well, eventually the train's going to have to stop and the square peg's going to have to be dealt with. Gonna have to round them out a little bit so they fit the hole. Seriously, I mean, the problem has to be dealt with. They need to learn to conform, because here's the deal. If they live their whole life like that, what kind of builders are they going to be building on other people? It's like we all live in this big neighborhood and we're all helping each other build our houses. And every day I make the rounds and I nail a few boards on Gary's house. And then I go nail a few boards on Raymond's house. And then I go nail a few boards on Dakota's house. And they're all doing the same thing with mine. We're all doing that. You want to know how somebody turns out to be the kind of person that they are once they get to be 15, 20, 30 years old? Look at the people they grew up with. Look at the friends that they had while they was growing up. All those people majorly affected the kind of person they wound up being. If you don't believe me, get to know, and I know y'all know people. I know people. And it's funny because I was talking to Al the other night on Messenger. We were messaging back and forth, and you know, he's a good example. I never knew until we met y'all, and then after we met y'all for a while, that he was your uncle. I didn't know that. And then Dad told me one day, he said, you know that that's Amy's uncle, right? And I was like, it just all like come rushing in, and it all made sense because like when he's around, yeah, it's just, you can tell the family, not only the resemblance, but there's a certain, even body language that, you know, I see it in Alonzo. And he ain't even really spent that much time around him at all. But it's a family trait. It's there. I see pictures that Dad has from when he was in high school, and it's like looking at you, sincerely. I mean, just like him. And we got pictures in our family that's the same way. There's all kinds of people we all know that are that way. And if something that's just genetic can affect your life that much, what about the people you spend every day with? How do you think they're molding and building on your house? On the character, the house of your character, and the house of your reasoning, and the house of the way you process thought, and the house of how you feel about politics, and how you feel about God, and how you feel about marriage, and how you feel about raising kids, and how you feel about even the kind of car you drive. It makes a huge difference. You know, I have never bought a Ford vehicle in my life. I'm not saying I won't ever do it, but there it'll have to be in a different time, because I just don't know if I could drive up on the hill with a Ford or not. Why? Well, I mean, it's a laughing thing. I know we all joke about this stuff, but you know why I feel that way? Because Grandpa's always had a GM, and Dad, except for one time in my life that I can remember, has always had a GM. And it's what we do. It's what we drive. And I like them, and I don't, you know, it's petty. It's, you know, when you really think about it, it's kind of silly. Yeah. But you see how he built upon my house? He built upon my foundation, and that's one of the many nails drove into my house. Something like that. So if something like that can be stuck in there so prevalently, and it don't amount to a hill of beans, no offense, then what do you think that we're doing to each other when it comes to important matters? You know, a good builder, here's a couple of things that they are. First of all, they follow the leader. You know, you got a crew full of guys and they're on a job. You've got one guy that's reading the blueprints, not four guys. There's one man reading the blueprints. Her dad was always that guy because he wanted to be, if it was wrong, it had to be his fault. And he wanted it that way. I'm very glad that he did, because some things got kind of confusing sometimes. But he's the one who, I don't know if y'all have ever built anything, but a wall has a top plate and a bottom plate, and then there's studs in between the top and the bottom plate. So when you're figuring out where all the windows and the doors go, you lay your top and bottom plate out on your sawhorses there side by side, and then you measure down through there and you mark where every stud's going to go and all the jacks by all the door frames and the windows and all that stuff. He's the one doing that. You did not get involved in that. If you wanted to help him, you could come behind and go ahead and do your final marks on his marks. But you didn't pull no tape on that. That was his deal. He was the leader. He was the one reading the map. We were the laborers. And we were the ones who carried the boards and put them all in place and drove the nails and stood the walls and nailed the braces in and made sure everything was level. But he was the leader. A good builder follows their leader. Every one of us has got one in our life. And ultimately, the Lord is supposed to be our leader, the leader of all of us. He's our Father. He's the boss. And he's the one with the plan. He's the one with the map. And he's give us a copy and showed us how to read the map. But he's the one we're supposed to be following. He's the one who makes the rules. And we're just supposed to be doing the work. Another thing they do it right the first time. Ain't nothing in the world I hate worse than having to build something and then tear it apart and do it again. Oh, it's just like a pet peeve of mine. What do the old timers call it? Licking your calf twice. It gripes me to no end. We would have to deal with homeowners sometimes, usually, sadly, the ladies. They would come in and they would want this window right here. And you'd say, well, now you know that's not going to be over your sink. We did this one time in a house. We put the cabinets, we laid them out on the floor how they were going to be. And we put the sink right there where it was going to be. And we told her, here's where your window needs to be, right here. I don't want it there. I want it a foot that way. Well, then it ain't going to be centered over your sink. Well, that's where I want it. So that's where we put it. We got the drywall done. We got the siding on the house. And when we installed the cabinets, she says, why is my window not over my sink? So, yeah, her whole process of building her house got delayed almost a month because all that had to be tore out. And it all had to be done again. She didn't know how to read the map, man. She didn't know how to read the plans. She needed to have trusted the builder and let him do it the way it needed to be done. A good builder does things right the first time. He don't build stuff and have to tear it down and cut stuff. Another thing he does, he sticks to the plan. He don't change things up in the middle of the deal. He don't try to rewrite the rules in the middle of the game. He sticks to the plan. It can be the simplest little ranch-style 1,200-square-foot home that ever was built without a porch or nothing. But it still has a plan, and it must be followed in order to get the results you want. Another thing he does, he don't waste material. That was another pet peeve of her dad, and I'm glad he taught me this because now it's mine, and it saves you money in the long run. But, you know, just a little bit more figuring, and you can figure out how to get all your material out of less boards. And then when you're done, the scrap pile, I always took a lot of pride in the fact of when I build something, my scrap, there's never anything longer than 6 inches in my scrap pile. I'll find a place to use it. By the time I'm done, my scrap pile is little bitty because I use it all. Don't waste material. That costs somebody some money. And in life, you know, you're always building on other people. And you think about the application of the things I'm talking about here and how to apply them to your life and how you're affecting other people. Because look, yeah, other people are building on you, and you got to be aware of who's working on you too. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you're responsible for what you're doing to other people. And I'm responsible for what I'm doing to other people. You know, I'm building on the foundation of my children right now, who they will become for the rest of their life. I mean, I'm sure that as they grow older and they mature and they become wiser and more knowledgeable about the things of life, their opinions about some things might change some. I can foresee that maybe happening. But ultimately, who they are foundationally is ultimately up to me. And that's who's shaping them and molding them into the people that they're going to be. You know, how they're going to handle stress. How they're going to handle someone aggravating the snot out of them. You know, how do I handle it? See, I'm building them into what I ultimately kind of sort of am myself. And so are you. You're turning your kids into exactly what you are in a lot of ways. They don't leave a mess behind. They build something and it's quality. They do it right the first time. And they don't waste a bunch of material and they don't leave a big mess behind. And here's another thing they do. Her dad was always strict about this. We'd go in on a job and sometimes we were the subcontractor because he had an electrical business too. So sometimes we'd get hired out to do electrical work. And you'd come in there and it'd be time to pull the wire and everything. And because we were also framers and stuff, we had to sometimes fix the framing that the guys who framed the house before us did such a horrible job. So bad that we had to fix it in order to be able to wire it right. And you know, he would always tell me, he said, when you do your work, you be sure and set up the next guy for success. You set that next contractor that's coming in after you, set him up for success. Don't make him have to stop what he's doing and do your job because you didn't do it, because you did such a horrible job. Set him up for success. Think about him. And man, we do good to think about that. You know, Dad told me one time that everybody that's in your life, there's only just a very small percentage of the people that are in your life that are there from beginning to the end. Most people that are in our lives are only there for a season. God puts them in our life, and sometimes He takes them out of our life for a season to get you through a hard time, or for you to be a blessing and get them through a hard time, you know? Or for you to learn a lesson about something that there was no other way for you, Him to teach it to you but through hardship with this wonderful person that come into your life. I've had a couple of them. I'm glad that they were only there for a season, praise the Lord. But they were there. And you're only going to be in somebody's life for a season. I think about my kids, and I've got a good full spectrum view of parenthood when I look at my family, from grandpa all the way down to, you know, y'all, because you're the youngest and everything. And so y'all have got the littlest children. And then, you know, grandpa's on the other end of this thing, and his boys are all grown, got grandkids and stuff. So, you know, I look at my kids and where they're at right now, and I realize that at least in the context of their parent right now, I am only in their season, in this context, for a season. I'm only in their life for a season. And so it would behoove me to not waste my time, not waste the material, not leave a mess, and to realize that there's going to be somebody else come along after me that's going to have to do some building on their life too, on their foundation. And I need to set that person up for success. More often than not, it's our pastor, because I hope they stay in church. I pray they do. If they don't live around here, I pray they find a good church. And there's a chance that someday they'll have a different pastor than they have now. Well, what if I raise a kid and build on their foundation and they turn out to be a contentious, cantankerous, always striving, constantly causing strife and tail-bearing and backbiting and just a pot stirrer and just a hot mess? And then they go to this fella's church and want to be a member of his church, and he's trying to build on their foundation to help them be a better person. And they're such a wretch because of what I've made them. I sure didn't leave him much to work with, did I? It's like if you're wiring a house and you go to rewire something and you pull the receptacle out and there's this much wire sticking out of the box and you ain't got nothing to wire up to you because somebody cut the tail too short. Mercy. Sure don't help things very much. It can be done, but boy, it's a lot of work. It makes things tough. We shouldn't do that. Next, I want to talk about bad builders. I wish I had an hour to just sit and talk about some of the snafus that I have seen in the building trades. I am telling you what. Now, I thought that I had seen some really bad stuff, and I have. I've seen some real humdingers. Then, in 2011, I moved back from Virginia to Missouri. And then I started to see some real doozies, buddy. And I'm going to get ahead of myself here if I'm not careful. But there's a reason why. I'll talk about that in just a minute. Bad builders. Boy, they're everywhere. Anybody that's got a ladder, we used to make a joke. Oh boy, he's got a ladder. He bought a $200 ladder rack and put it on his truck. So now he's a general contractor. It's funny. It's that way in everything. I seen a guy on my Facebook today, and he was saying, sure see a lot of boys with their dad pulling around their daddy's lawnmower claiming to be a lawn care service or landscaping service. That's what he said. Somebody commented on her and said, hey, give him a break. That's what you started out as. Well, yeah, but it wasn't my dad's lawnmower, he says. Give me a break. Well, the world's full of them. And, you know, it's just like even in sawmills, every little bit you'll see a sawmill pop up over here and over there. As soon as tie prices go down, they disappear. And it's that way in everything. Bad builders, man. They get a misconstrued idea of what building is supposed to even be. They think it's going to pay way better than it really does. They think it's going to be way easier than what it really is. I know a boy, and he went to work for a roofing company. And he worked for him for about 3 months. And he didn't get the raise that he wanted. So, by George, he was fixing to leave. He was going to take half the crew with him, go start his own roofing company. This boy couldn't even chalk a straight line. Couldn't even hardly read a tape measure, but he was going to start his own roofing company. I'd love to see some of the roofs he'd do. I have one on my house that somebody just like him did. What? Oh my goodness. A mess. The world's full of bad builders. What's some of the stuff they do? Well, they cut corners. First of all, they cut corners. They find a way to do it cheaper, to do it with less material, to use an 8-penny instead of a 16-penny nail. You know, well, it held. Well, yeah, it held. My favorite saying that I always used to hear him say is, "Does that look good?" "Yeah, looks good for my house." Or, "Good enough for who it's for." I've heard that one too. Bad builders, they cut corners. They ain't worth a plug nickel, buddy. You get a bad builder. I tell you when you really learn how detrimental a bad builder really is when you have to come in and clean up their mess. When you have to come in and clean up the disaster that they left behind. When you got to come in and deal with the ire of the person that they did this to. Because that's how it always works. You hire a guy, he's a bad builder. He comes in, he wants half his money up front. He does about a day or two's worth of work, rips you off, takes your money, leaves, and there it sits. The rest of the material that he hacked through, the job half undone and not done at all, not done right at all, and now you got to find somebody willing to not only be honest with you and be a good builder, but come in and clean up somebody else's mess. So by the time you find somebody to come in here and do that, usually that person's pretty upset. I've had to deal with them. And you just got to deal with them in love because, man, they're sore. They've been rended bad. Bad builders, they cut corners. They're dishonest. They just tell you a line of baloney and lie to you and then take your money and run. They leave a mess behind. I don't even know where to begin. That's kind of a pet peeve of mine. If you ain't noticed, I've got a few of them. But I clean as I go when I'm cutting, when I'm building something. I don't like to step and walk around on a bunch of trash and stuff. Even when I'm carving, chainsaw carving now. I'm carving a piece and you're cutting off pieces. And you're kind of into what you're doing and you're starting to see it come about. And in a little while, I'll stop, turn the saw off and put it down and clean up my mess. Because I can't think when I'm trying to keep from breaking my ankles on all the trash on the floor. I can't think to do my job right. Drives me nuts. I used to be the cut guy on our crew a lot of times. I ran the chop saw. And so, because I was one of the two guys, I think, on the whole place that could read a tape measure. But I would make the guy who was doing the cleanup stuff, his job, he was designated as the cleaning guy. It's what he did. He carried lumber and picked up trash. And I'd have him over about every 15 minutes cleaning up my spot, man, because there was too much stuff under my feet. I couldn't take it. And if he didn't get it quick enough, I'd start kicking it all over the house until he got it picked up. He was a little bit hard-headed, but they leave a mess behind. They don't care what they do to somebody. How many builders do you know of people that don't care what kind of mess they leave behind? Take advantage of a person. Fill a little kid's head and their mind with a bunch of trash. Yeah. Leave it all behind. Go on with their life. Yeah. Don't care one little bit about what they did or what they said or what they showed some little kid. Mm-hmm. Say something horrible to their mom and dad and go on about their life and don't give a rip about what it did to their heart. Mm-hmm. Just leave a big mess behind. Bad builders. Bad. Mm-hmm. Their carelessness causes injury. You know, it ain't just what they do while they're on the job, tearing everything apart and destroying everything, cutting up all the good material and making bad cuts and measuring wrong and who cares and leave a big mess behind. But, you know, after they're gone, you come in there and there's boards with nails sticking out of them. That's another big no-no. Never, ever leave nails sticking out of a board. You pull a brace off of a wall when you're building your inside walls. You pull that brace off that wall. You take 5 seconds, pull your hammer out and drive them nails back through the sharp end, back into, drive them back through. And we don't bend them over because we're going to use that board again. We don't waste material, remember. We use those braces again. But you drive them nails back out of there, somebody will step on them and get hurt. Bad builders, they don't care about stuff like that. They'll leave boards with nails laying around. They'll leave a hole in the floor and not put a piece of plywood over it and cover it up. Somebody fall through it. They'll leave a door without a barrier there for somebody to walk through and fall off where there ain't no porch because they didn't finish the job. Bad builders. They cause a lot of injury after they're gone. They don't follow instructions. They don't care about the plan. Most of the time because they don't even understand the plan. Remember, they're dishonest. They lied about what they were and what they knew and what they could do. They sold somebody a bill of goods and they don't follow instructions. Well, the world is full of good builders and bad ones. You know, we moved back over here to Missouri and it shocked me because, I mean, you know, over where we lived, we had a fire departments and all that kind of stuff just like we do here, and you'd hear them go by every once in a while, but mostly because there was a brush fire or something like that. You just didn't hear about people's houses catching on fire and burning down very often. But I think in the last year and 2 months, I think there's been 7 houses in Wayne County burned down. 7 that I can take you to the foundation and show you. 7 houses that are gone. And all the stuff in there, just like I talked about this morning, all their memories, pictures, guns, clothes, pets, everything else, gone. Burned to the ground. And it's always an electrical problem. Well, guess what we don't have in Wayne County? We don't have electrical inspections. Now, having grown up in Wayne, in this area where there are no inspections and there ain't no rules for nothing, you just do whatever you want to, it kind of chapped me a little bit when we moved over there and I discovered that you can't do anything without it being inspected by someone who is qualified to make sure you did your job right. And at first, I resented him very, very much. He was just like the devil. I mean, we hate the inspector. The inspector's a dog. The inspector's the worst. He's just stalling us. He's just dragging his feet. He's just making us lose money. He's just looking for a reason to fail us. No, I come to the realization one day that you know what the inspector's really for? To cut down on that big long list of bad builders. That inspector is there to keep people honest. Because there's a whole lot more bad builders than there are good ones. You want to build, have a house built in this area? There ain't, but there's just a really short list of guys' names that you get. And you know how long you got to wait to get your house built by them? Some of them over a year right now. Because nobody wants a bad builder. They want a good one. And if you're a good one, your reputation precedes you. You'll never lack for work if you're honest, don't waste material, you do a good job, you follow instructions, you clean up after yourself. Well, there's an inspector. That's what his job is, to make sure that that's what you're doing. That inspector would come in there, and now don't get me wrong, every once in a while we'd have one that was kind of a stinker, but mostly they would come in there, and sometimes they would find something that we had totally missed. And I was grateful for the inspector because if that hadn't have been caught, that could have been a danger to the people who were buying that house. Big investment, buying a house. Building a house is even more of an investment. My soul, it makes me cringe to think about the cost of building a home nowadays. And I couldn't even hardly ever stand by, I don't think, and not build it myself. And the cost would still be exorbitant. And yet, you know, one little mistake, and their house is a pile of ashes. And it could be my fault. You know, as much care as you take, at the end of a job, there's this thing called a punch list that you make. And it's all the things you go around and you look at all the little odds and ends things that aren't done yet that need to be done so the inspector can come. And the last week or so of a job project like that is working the punch list, getting all them little things fixed and all the little loose ends tied up. But every once in a while, one will slip through the cracks, and that's what the inspector just says, "Hey, I'm not going to fail you, but I want you to fix that right now." Yes, sir. There were some inspectors that would fail you, and then you had to come back and then reschedule another inspection a week later, and it was an incentive for you to get it right the first time. But every once in a while, we had an inspector or two that would work with us and say, I'll let you fix that, and then I'll pass you, but I'm not leaving until you fix it. He has common sense, the inspector, but he goes by the rules. You know, we got an inspector, too. In this life, watching every little thing we do. He knows if you're cutting corners. He knows if you're leaving a mess behind. He knows, he notices when you're sticking to the plan. He notices when you ain't wasting material and you ain't leaving a mess behind and you ain't damaging. He notices this stuff. The inspector uses the same rules to inspect you by that you were given to build by. You ever think of that? If I had a set of plans for a house and it said build it just this way, and they came from the inspector, and then the inspector comes to inspect the house and I've done it exactly like the plan say, and he fails it because of something else that he has, that wouldn't make no sense, would it? Nope. He inspects that house by the same rules that I was supposed to build the house by. The Lord does us the same exact way. We have the rules right here that He's going to judge us by. And coincidentally, they're the same rules we have for our building that we'll be doing in this life. They're right here. Same rule book. And so that's something to not forget. A lot of people like to think that the Lord is not fair when it comes to judgment, but He does all things well. That's what the Bible says. And if there's any unfairness or failure on anybody's part, it's going to be on ours. The inspector has the power to stop the whole show. You know, this is something that the Lord don't do very often, but I'm telling you, He has the power to. Earthly inspectors do it a lot more often. Come in there and just say, "Nope, stop everything. Do it again." He has the power to make you fix what you've done wrong. I mentioned that a while ago about the inspector giving us the chance to fix what he found that we'd done wrong. You know, the Lord is the same way. How many times has He showed you something that you've done wrong and give you a chance to fix it? More often than not. A lot more often than them inspectors would that would come inspect our houses. I know that. And another thing He does is that He always comes back for another inspection. There were some counties over there that were just impossible to work in just about because of all the inspections you had to have. You had to have everything inspected and approved, from everything from the drain field to the cabinets that you were putting in the house and the kind of gravel that you were putting on your driveway. I mean, it had to be tested, inspected, and checked when you were done before you could proceed to the next step in the process. But the one thing you could bank on was the fact that there was always going to be inspections. And so when you kind of got used to that idea that, hey, you're being watched on everything you do, then it just kind of becomes second nature to not cut corners, waste material, do things wrong, leave things covered up. Because you knew somebody was watching. You knew somebody was going to hold you to task. So, that's what the inspector does. If we're all going to do our job, if we're all doing our job that we've been given to do, then the project goes along smoothly and progress is made. The Bible says there in verse 9 what we read, "For we are laborers together with God." Think about that. That's you and me laboring together with God. So we're co-laborers, but we're also working with God, and He's working with us, which is kind of a miraculous thing in and of itself. But, you know, I don't know how many times I've seen, you know, your dad right out there. I mean, he worked with us every day. There was very seldom a time when he would get us started on something and then he'd run down the road to go do something else. He didn't do that real often. Unless it was trout season and we were close by a creek and he remembered his fishing pole that morning. No, he didn't slip off too often. He stayed right there and worked with us. That's what we're supposed to do. We're building on each other's homes, on our houses, on our foundations. We're influencing how each other's kids grow up and what they become. And not only that, but we still continue to influence and build on each other and the kind of people we are as adults. You know, if you come to church and everybody's all sourpussed and bulled up and sitting there like a toad, do you leave feeling the same way, or do you leave feeling encouraged and ready for the week? No, you leave feeling just like everybody else was sitting there. You know, there was reference commercials when we're preaching, but there was one time, and it was the whole premise of the whole thing was that if you do something nice to somebody, it rubs off, it transfers and keeps on going. I think it was a Sharpie commercial or something, but somebody didn't hold the door for somebody and it kind of shut in their face and kind of offended them. Well, it made them mad. And then, you know, and then somebody, they walked on in the store and then some lady dropped something and they didn't pick it up for because they were mad because that guy slammed the door in their face. And it just went through a whole series of events like that and it just got worse and worse and worse. And then they showed you the other thing where if you just stopped for a second, held the door, well, it made, thank you. And then they immediately went somewhere and then they did something nice for somebody else. And then they did something nice for somebody. How many, I think some of us have experienced this here, but where you pull up to the drive-through window at McDonald's and, you know, and say, "How much do I owe you?" And they say, "You're actually, the person in front of you paid for your meal." What? Why didn't I get one of everything this time? I was going to do that. No, but I mean, some person in front of you, some stranger, just did a random act of kindness and bought your breakfast for you. Well, what do you normally do? I'll just go ahead and pay for the person behind me. Normally. Because one good deed deserves another, right? One good turn, is that what they say? Well, we're laboring together. That's what we're supposed to be doing with God. One of us not doing our job means someone else is going to have to do their job and yours too. I've experienced that a bunch. And I know everybody in here has. We've talked about it some at your job and your job and your job and your job. And it's a common thing. You know, there's usually just a very small nucleus of people on a job that do all the work. And everybody else are just kind of Freddy freeloaders, just floating along, being drug along with the tide, riding on everybody else's coattails. It makes your job a lot harder. If everybody'd pull together and do the job they're there to do and that they're hired to do, man, things go so much smoother. If you got five people on a job, one of them's the boss and the rest of them are the laborers, and those four other guys, they're doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. They're carrying the lumber and they're cutting everything and they're doing all this stuff they're supposed to do and driving the nails. Man, it ain't going to be no time. You're going to see the roof come up on that thing. But if you got three people fighting over whose turn it is to read the plans this time, there ain't nothing going to get done, because at the end of the day, if lumber don't get carried, house don't get built. You do your job, I'll do my job. Let's work together with God, and let's build each other's houses the right way. A lot of times, builders do these things that are substandard, and an overseer might not catch it because it gets covered up with other construction. I've seen some things like that. You look at a house and, man, it looks absolutely fantastic. Me and Dad went and stained a deck for this old lady over there in Virginia one time in this subdivision that it had been a piece of ground on this farm that was worthless. It was real hilly and deep, hills and hollers in it on one edge of this man's farm. And he sectioned it off and he sold it to this developer, and this guy was going to build homes in it. Well, the first thing he had to do was start hauling thousands of dump truck loads of dirt literally into this place and filling up all these hollers and stuff to make some flat ground to build a house on. Well, I don't know if you know anything about building or not, but if you don't compact that soil with a serious compactor and do it right, then that ground is going to settle. Well, he built a $300,000 house on this one section right there. And this old lady, bless her heart, I mean, it's like the last home she's ever going to buy. It was like all she'd ever saved for in her life. And she bought this place with her dead husband's insurance money and her pension and what she had. And this was it. This was all the marbles in one basket. And 2 years later, me and Dad went over to stain her deck. And she said, well, before y'all leave, do y'all do carpenter work? And Dad said, yeah. She said, would you mind to come up here and take a look at a couple of things for me? Well, sure. So we went up there and said, what's the deal? And she said, well, first of all, my screen door just won't shut. I don't know what's wrong with it. Well, Dad took one look at it and he said, oh, my. And y'all know Dad don't see real well. And even he could see that we were looking at what is that thing that's not a square, but it's leaned over? Is it a rhombus? Is that what that's called? All right, that's kind of what her door looked like. And we thought, oh, no, what in the world's going on here? So we went inside, and she said, another thing I want to show you is my sheetrock. It's got a big old crack in it right here. Anybody know what that means? That means the house is settling. That means the ground underneath the foundation is compact. It's settling. It's moving. And that house had settled over 2 inches. If memory serves me right, it had settled almost that much to the point where it had just cracked the sheetrock all to pieces in the house. The doors wouldn't half shut. I'm talking a $300,000 home. And this poor old lady, what are you going to do? You don't fix that mess. You can't jack a house up like that. And see, somebody skipped one. They cut a little corner. I know who did it too. Cut a little corner, save a little money, hurry up and get paid. And somebody else paid the price for that. The ultimate price. Because in the end, that house, it'll never be right. Even if they continue to find a way to patch it together and rebuild the door, and there's always going to be something messed up. Because of one little thing that got covered up and nobody seen. When it was all done, boy, there's green grass, there's mulch bed and flowers and plants and landscaping and shrubs and a maple tree in the front yard and a paved driveway and a ground that was sinking. What a mess. All because of something that nobody could see. The things that we do, the things we say, the things we laugh at, the things we get mad at, the way we react to good news or bad news or maddening news or whatever it is. There's somebody around you. If nobody else, your kids are. They're watching you. They're watching to see how you act. And then that's how they are too. And how it makes me afraid to think of the things that I have built and then covered up in my kids. And I fear of how it might show up someday. And when I see it start, the walls start to crack a little bit, and I think, I know why that's happening. It's my fault. I did that. That's why it's so important to just slow down a little bit and do things the right way. Every man, says in verse 13 there, every man's work shall be made manifest. It might be hidden right now, but there'll come a day when it ain't hid no more. For the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed, by fire. Last point. Inspector shows up, and there's only one of two things that's going to happen. You're going to pass, or you're going to fail. It's as simple as that. Everybody's got their fingers crossed behind their back when he shows up. But you're either going to pass or you're going to fail. Verse 14 says, if any man's work abide, which he hath built thereupon, he shall receive a reward. If any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss. But he himself shall be saved, yet so as by fire. And then up in verse 10 it says, according to the grace of God which is given unto me, as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. The outcome in the end is influenced greatly by our diligence to building the right way. I mean, it all hinges upon that. It does say God's the one that gives the increase. I've seen people that have done a horrible job raising their kids, and their kids grow up and are fantastic people that love the Lord, and then they raise their kids right. And I don't understand it. And not only that, but it ain't like their parent dies and then they're not an influence on the next generation. Nope. They're a good parent to their kids whilst at the same time dealing with a stinker for a grandpa or a grandma. Constantly trying to influence their kids away from the right way. And yet they still can raise their kids right. And their kids grow up and love the Lord and serve Him. How'd that happen? Well, because the Lord is the one who gives the increase. Ultimately, in the end, He's the one. Our responsibility is to be good builders, man. That's what our job is. We're just laborers. That's the last thing. God's the master builder behind the project. He's the one reading the plan. We're the laborers. And so, when it comes to this matter of building, let's do it right. There's nothing worse than doing things two or three times. Or nothing worse than getting something that you think is absolutely perfect done. And then you walk around and you see something that's just like, oh no, I forgot that. And now you're going to have to tear something half down in order to fix it. And let's not do that. You know, there's a lot of things that the Lord gives us a lot of grace in our life when it comes to this matter of building. On each other and on our children and everything else. But there are some things that we get one shot at. One time. First impressions. You only get one first impression, right? Ain't that what they say? That's right. You know? You get one shot at making a good impression on somebody the first time. How many of us are so quick to be rough on somebody on that first, you know? I know people that, you know, they if they like you, boy, they like you. Think you're a fine fella. If you cross them one time, you mess up one time, they're done with you. You're done forevermore. You're X'd out, and that's it. You're not on the list no more. Well, let's not be that kind of person. Let's build things right. Amen? All right, let's bow our heads. Lord, thank you for your blessings on us. Thank you for this little message here, Lord. I pray that you'd help us to not forget it. Help me, Lord, to remember that every word that I say and everything that I do, every action that I do, Lord, is building on somebody else's foundation. Lord, help me to be a good builder. Help me to be a builder like you. Help me to build something, Lord, that somebody can come along years down the road and say, whoever did that, they were following the plan. Help us, Lord, in these matters in our life. Give us strength. Give us wisdom to do right, to build right, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. You're dismissed.